This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hello, it's 4:06, 90 degrees, and welcome back, Mike.
It's not 90 degrees in here, it's about 60.
About 60 here, yeah. But so-called outside, 90.
Oh, outside. Well, let's not go out there and do the show.
Glad to have you back after your...
Thank you.
Everything
went
well?
Oh, yeah, it went well. It was quick. I couldn't believe how quick it went, and the most painful thing was the shot. They shot me in the mouth. With.
Novocaine?
Yeah, whatever
stuff.
It was.
Yeah, so...
So I just sat in the car, and my wife drove me home.
There you go.
Yeah.
And you were floating.
Yeah, well, I was kind of observing the scenery.
Oh, what's new?
Well, I don't know yet. I've got a whole bunch of stuff I wanted to talk about, but I was wondering, did you ever or did I ever tell you the story on how I got this gig? Did I ever mention
No, that? I don't believe so.
Well, you know, I was thinking about that today, and I thought, you know, that might be a funny story for people to listen to. But, you know, I had just finished up my my political life at the end of 2002. Mm-hmm. So here we are in 2003, and my wife and I stop in a Casey's restaurant to have breakfast because we're going north to get some plants, you know.
Right.
And I walked in the restaurant, and Pat Markham was sitting in a booth eating breakfast.
Mm.
And I said, "Hi, Pat." He said, "Hi, how you doing?" I said, "Fine." I said, "Pat," and I hadn't planned on saying this because spur of the moment. I said, "Pat, how come you don't have a gardening show on your radio stations?" And he looked at me and says, "Well, make me a proposal." And I went, "Oh, okay." And so I went and sat down. We had breakfast, and I left. And And so I didn't make a proposal for that day or the next day. And he called me up about the third day. And he says, "Is my proposal ready yet?" I said, "Yeah, it'll be there by 3 o'clock.
Wow.
And he says, "Okay." And then I sat down at my desk and I went, "How do I make a proposal for a radio show? I'd never done that before." So I just wrote out some stuff, you know, just like I do on a sheet of lined paper.
Yeah.
And gave it to him. And he looked at it and he says, "Good. You want to start Wednesday?" I says, "Yeah, fine."
You just that easy.
It was that easy. I couldn't believe it. And that was in 2003.
Wow. Yeah. 17 years back.
Yes. It's amazing. I can't, you know, every time I think about it, it seems like, you know, I just started this, you know, not too long ago. Right.
I know. Time just goes by too fast.
It does. It does. And, hey, if you're listening today and you want some good advice, I probably got some. And if you have a question, don't hesitate to call 673-4464, and we'll get you right through. You'll ask your question. We'll have a conversation, and I'll tell you the solution. And if it's an easy one, I'll tell it to you quick. If it's a hard one, it'll take a while, okay? But that's 673-4464. And, you know, it's thank you all for listening, and you know, this radio show is to help gardeners out there or answer questions. It's a education kind of program. It's something to have fun with and maybe give you ideas on what you could do with your yard, or if you have a something going wrong, maybe in that program that day I can tell you how to fix it, because maybe that's my topic that day. And like today, my topic is heat and drought and lack of water. And what it does to plants and lawns and stuff, and give you some ideas on how to keep your stuff alive. And one of the reasons, Ashley, this morning when she and Kyle were on the radio, and Kyle mentioned, "Well, Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show, blah, blah." And she says, "You know, maybe I could call and ask about why my lawn is turning brown and stuff like that." So I am prepared, Ashley.
All right, Ashley.
Hope you're listening.
Bring it on. We're ready for you.
So anyway, with all this heat that we've been having, I know it's August and all that, and we're supposed to be warm. But, you know, coupled with, you know, drought conditions that we've had for 4, maybe 5 years now, and, of course, the price of water, I'm sure, has risen to all the homeowners in there because more people are using it, and, you know, the hotter it gets, the more it's used. But I'm finding that many of the landscapes that we are currently doing or involved in, not all of them, but many of them, Folks are not wanting new lawns installed for a whole variety of reasons. And the trend seems to be for hardy, deer-resistant plants with a lot of mulch or rock of, you know, gravel or round rock or, you know, something that's very easy to take care of and doesn't require a sprinkler system or any kind of a major water type thing that they don't have to do a lot of maintenance on. And I can see the point. And it's not just older people. It's all age groups.
Everybody. Most people.
Yeah, most people. It goes across the whole gamut of ages and house sizes and all that. However, we did a beautiful job here a week or so ago for some folks, and we did put a sod lawn in, but it's not the main feature, or it doesn't take up the most area. It's it's easy to take care of because it's somewhat smaller, and they follow directions and take care of it. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
But the majority of it is we have a patio area that we built with a fire pit and rock all the way around it for about 15 feet and a flagstone so they can set chairs, and the rest of it, a lot of bark mulch and plants that we'll cover. So it's not the lowest kind of maintenance, but it's kind of like a medium maintenance thing. Mm-hmm. But there are folks that wanted that kind of
balances
thing.
Balances it
yeah,
out.
You just try to balance it out so it doesn't cost them $14,000 a month for watering, stuff like that. So
those days are gone.
Yeah, but and while low maintenance is good and can be attractive, because there's a lot of different ways you can do that. I believe a small lawn adds a nice splash of color and brings a little coolness to the yard as well. So, if you can find a happy medium in there, a balance or something, and you've got some flat area that it doesn't take a major machinery kind of excavation thing, to put your lawn in. That's good. And it's in real estate magazines I've read over the years, it talks about what the effect of landscaping has on the sale of a home. And
has a lot of it.
Yeah, and the biggest feature was that when a person's going to look at a home, a nice lawn in the front yard really is a hot spot for them. They really like that. That's kind of a real key selling point. So that's the kind of...
It's like if you had nice landscaping, maybe they took care of the house.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Whoa, what a concept.
Bingo!
Yeah, but here lately, I'm probably going to repeat some of the stuff that I've been talking about in the past few weeks, but it's getting worse. But I've been seeing many lawns suffering in the heat that we've been experiencing. Lots of factors at play here. It's not just that it's hot and dry. That's one of the factors. But for instance, lawns that are old, old meaning they've been in 7, 8, 10 years, something like that, they need a little bit of extra care as they age. It's kind of like people. The older you get, the more care you need. Same way with plants, and especially with lawns in Douglas County, for crying out loud. But aeration, of course, I've spoken about aeration, or that's the pulling of plugs of soil out of the lawn to get water and fertilizer into the root zone where it does the most good. And most people are not aware of how to thatch thatch lawns that are full of the old grass, and I'll explain that in a minute. Okay. And compacted soil also impedes water flow through the soil. Now thatch, when you mow your lawn, you got a mower and you got a bagger and you're bagging it all up and you think, hey, that's good, no problem, it's all bagged up. But at least 10 or 15% of that grass that you cut, the smaller, finer pieces, don't get sucked up by the bag, don't get sucked up by the mower. Mm-hmm. It kind of drops and filters down into the lawn. And it's not noticeable, say, for 3-4 years, maybe. Mm. And then the fifth year rolls around, and we get heat like this, and you go, how come I got these, why do I get these brown patches? Or why does the lawn I've been fertilizing and watering, I thought, enough, but it's still not really super green. And I know it's August, but still, it should be a little bit greener than what it is. Kind of a light green to almost dull green.
Kind of semi-sick looking.
Yeah, you know it's alive, but it doesn't look lush and beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, that's because that thatch, of course, builds up and builds up and builds up. Well, it's like a thatch roof in the tropics, you know. They build thatch roofs simply because they don't have the lumber a lot. But when the rain hits and torrents of rain in the tropics hit the thatch, and it rolls off. It does not penetrate their home. And the same thing with the thatch in the lawn. Water comes down, or you think you're watering amply for your lawn, but if only, let's say you're putting out 1,000 gallons, but if only 100 gallons actually penetrates that thatch,
right,
it doesn't get down deep enough, and it's not enough quantity to get into the root system to green it up. And mm-hmm. so consequently, the lawn goes into kind of a semi-dormancy, and as a consequence, that's where it loses its luster, it loses its good look.
Yeah.
And that's why thatching is an important thing. Say every 3 or 4 years, you need to thatch your lawn. If you want a good lawn, you want it green, there are some things you got to do. It's
sure.
like getting
yeah.
an oil change for your rig. You know, if you don't do that, eventually you have big problems, you know, and it's expensive to fix. But you can go to a rental place and rent a thatcher. And what it is, it's like a big gigantic, well, not a gigantic, but a big heavy duty mower, and it has steel blades that are thick steel blades. It actually combs the dead thatch out, the dead grass out of the existing lawn. So you start in one end and you go down and you adjust the height to where you think it needs to be, and you go down one side maybe for 40 feet, turn around and look at where you've been, and you'll see all this dead grass sitting up on top. Well, it combs it out,
kind of, you know, like a rake.
Exactly. Well, some people call them power rakes.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And that's exactly what it is. Only the tines are, say, a quarter inch thick. And so it gets a whole lot of that. And that's the stuff that is keeping a lot of the water from penetrating down into it.
Yeah.
But it's a two-phase operation. You can't just thatch it and let it go. And the first thing you do, if you're going to thatch, you cut your lawn as short as you can get it, because it doesn't matter at that point. And then you thatch it, and you've got all this dead stuff coming out. And you go usually two different ways. You go lengthwise and then widthwise. And, you know, that way you've got the majority of it. You don't get all of it, but you get, you know, say 80% of it or 90% of it out.
Right.
And get that all cleaned up. And then you get the aeration machine, or some people call them a plugger, and it has it kind of works the same way, but it actually plugs. It pulls plugs of soil out of the
right.
earth there.
Yeah.
And you go down and you do that a couple of different ways. You look back and it looks like the American Kennel Club had a show, because that's what these little plugs look like, is dog doo-doo.
Yeah, yeah.
and what that does, after you cleaned all that up, then when you fertilize and water, the fertilizer and water actually get down into the root system.
Where it's going to do some good.
Where it's going to do some good. And within 3 or 4 days, you see a difference. Within
wow.
2 weeks, it's lush and green. If you've put the right fertilizer on in the right amount, et cetera, it's lush and green in 2 weeks, 10 days to two
nice.
Weeks. Yeah, it's like a brand new lawn.
That quick, Martha.
Oh, that quick, because you still got the root mass of all the grass. You know, the roots are still there, and it fills in the spaces very quickly. You know, when you're done, you go, oh, my gosh, I got all these holes and spaces, and you know, it'll never be filled in again. It fills in, like I say, 10 days, 2 weeks max.
Mm.
And I am kind of skeptical about doing it when it's, 90 degrees and above. I just feel that if it were a little cooler, or like 70s or even the 80s, it does less harm for the grass that you leave.
Yeah, be more absorbent, maybe.
More absorbent, because when you fertilize and then you start socking the water to it, if you have a sprinkler system, let's say it's only set on you know, 20 minutes a zone or something.
Yeah.
You got to double that up and really float it so that that fertilizer gets activated and that water gets down deep mm-hmm. into the root zones.
Right.
And if you do that once a day for, you know, 3 or 4 days, you start then you can start slacking off on the water a bit. Maybe every other day, and then when it's green again, you know that you've succeeded, and consequently you can, you know, within a month refertilize, because the holes are still there, basically, refertilize, and you're good to go for, you know, a few more years.
Yes, far, bingo bango.
Yeah. Do we have a break?
We do.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back with more thatching. No relation to Margaret Thatcher, I'm assuming.
No, her name is... last name starts ends with E-R, not I-N-G.
That's true. Anyway, more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show coming up on Best Country 103.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
Yeah, don't tell me what to say. Best Country 103. Let's, News Radio.
Yeah,
1240.
You want me to sing a Hank Williams tune?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, did he sing Your Cheating Heart?
Yes, he did.
Well, hang on now.
Clear your throat.
Your cheating heart. We'll tell on you. But I've been talking about thatching, and I hope Ashley's been listening, because that's probably what's going on with her lawn. Now, there's one other item. One of the reasons for the plugging is because, you know, after a lot of use on a lawn, the soil gets compacted, and that's one of the deterrents to the water penetration, too. Eventually, it'll all penetrate, but it takes so long, and especially in the summer, if you're not watering enough, it takes so long to penetrate into the roots that that's why the lawns look a little sad at that time. But compaction is, you know, kids are playing on it, people are walking on it, you mow it, say, once a week or whatever, and so there's compaction going on. And say, after 3 or 4 years, it's hard, feel it. You can walk on it and feel it, and that's why you aerate, because you want to lessen that compaction. And here in Douglas County, where we're primarily clay soil, that when it's compacted, it's really compacted, so that's a good thing. But like I say, if you want that lawn to stay green and healthy, thatch removal and aeration should be done at least every 3 to 4 years. You know, if you're experiencing a lawn that's kind of struggling, you know, just do the work or have it hired done. I mean, we do that stuff. There's a lot of landscapers around here and lawn maintenance guys that can do that for you. You know, just call them up, they give you a bid to get the job done, and it's improved, period. So adding to that dilemma is a little bug called a grub, and I've spoken about the grubs before, and that's another reason you may see some yellow spots in your lawn, where maybe the lawn is fairly green, but there's some round yellow spots. Well, those are the grubs eating the grass roots.
They're nasty little things.
Oh, they are. And they're about an inch long. They're segmented. They got little tiny feet, and they're kind of grayish brown.
Sounds like my ex-wife.
Yeah, well, they're littler. They're really small, honest. But they also cause havoc, and the way to treat them, especially after you've gone through the aeration process and the thatching process, is you treat it with a granular pesticide called 7, and that's spelled S-E-V-I-N. And that'll take care of that population, and they'll get the heck out of Dodge or die, you know. and that way, there's nothing eating the roots of your grass, for crying out loud. They don't grow well unless they have a root. They have to have a root. That's like, you know, you got to have a mouth to chew. So, but anyway, you know, adding this whole dilemma, of course, is that the last 4 or 5 years, as I mentioned before, our annual rainfall has been below average. You know, that means over time the soil begins to dry out, the deep soil, and when you look at our, you know, our trees around, and I spoke about this last year because I was seeing it. You see Douglas fir, you see some other trees that are turning brown. Well, that's because there's no soil moisture, because we just hadn't, like I say, had enough rain. We've been, averaging 24, 22 inches now. Well, our old average was about 34 inches a year.
That adds up.
Yeah, and so, you know, if you have a couple of years where you get substandard rain, there's going to be some effect, but it's not bad. But when you get 4 or 5 years, that soil moisture just dissipates. It ain't there anymore. And so consequently, only the toughest trees, or the trees with the deepest roots, are the ones that survive. It's usually the young stuff that curls their roots up and goes by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that over and over out everywhere. When you get out of town and out through Dixonville or Melrose or anything like that, you'll see a nice stand of young Doug fir that's maybe, you know, 20 feet tall, 25 feet tall, 6-8 inches in diameter, and you wonder, why are they dying? And there are, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 of them in a group, and they're all dying. And it's because of the drought conditions. And when they get weak from drought, that's when bugs also move in, because they don't have any resistance or energy or whatever it is that they need to fight off the bug population.
Yeah.
So it's a double whammy there. And
the trees don't have a chance.
Yeah, exactly. It's but and if we got 34 inches of rain this winter, that would certainly help, but it wouldn't make up for the deficit in 1 year.
Right.
You'd have to have, you know, at least 3 or 4 years of good rainfall to reestablish that soil moisture level that we once had. And, you know, I remember it was 1996. I think we had 42 or 43 inches of rain, and that's when the semis fell off the road there by and went into the Umpqua because of the slide and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was rain, baby. It rained and rained and rained.
And it was flooding just about everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a super flood, but it was, you know, high water everywhere in the streets and stuff like that. I mean, you know, good year, three years of 34 to 36 inches of rain would really help, because with that comes a good snowpack, and you know, so that you know that you're going to have a good summer flow into your reservoirs that are there for irrigation for farmers, etc. And you know, the city of course takes water from the river and treats it, and you know, we got to have that water.
It doesn't just come out of the faucet.
I know it doesn't, but you know, the water situation, being what it is, has changed the style of landscaping somewhat, and like I said earlier too, more and more people are using very hardy plants, those that are quote drought resistant, the type that can survive on, you know, once a week watering possibly, and then after a year in the ground, they might even need less, because there's stuff I have in my yard I only water once a week now. That's it.
Really?
Yeah, and a big rhododendrons. And I was eyeballing them earlier today, and I thought, well, when I get home tonight, I got to drag my 200-foot hose out because they're way on the other side, and give them a good dose. But, you know, about once a week in this weather. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even start watering them until I think the end of June, because they didn't need it. And you can tell when they need it, because the leaves are drooping. They're down. They're not they're not standing out like they should.
Mm-hmm.
They're just, it's limp. You go, what's wrong with that plant? Well, it needs water.
It's obvious.
Yeah, it's obvious, really too. But flowering type shrubs, you know, they need a little bit more water during the bloom time, which is from March to June, because that's when they're most active. That's when they're producing the flowers. That's when they're, putting on that active growth. But after the blooming time, then less water is needed for their survival. So if it's a water problem that you have, or your water bill you think is too high, you don't have to water the same all year round. there's specific times where you can water needs a little bit more water for the plant to function, and then there's times that you can slack off on that water and just go into quote a survival mode, if you will.
Yeah.
And that's fine, as long as in that survival mode you like I say, once a week watering or once every 10 days, depending on, you know, if you got shade in your place or is it full blasting sun all the time. You know, there's a little bit of change up you got to be open to and eyeball and say, okay, I need water, and maybe I need it every 5 days instead of every seven. You know, okay, that's good, but you're still saving on water, and you're saving the plant at the same time.
Right,
and that's what's
that's the name of the game.
That's the name of the game. Now, most trees are even hardier than many shrubs. You know, once they're established, they do well with like two or three waterings, maybe in July, August, and September. You know, September, unless it turns cool and rainy, you're still watering a little bit. But July, August are the two hot, dry months. You know, June, you get a hot day occasionally, but, you know, there's still soil moisture that the trees are thriving in. And I've said before, I've got maybe 20 different Japanese maples planted around my place within a couple hundred feet of the house and stuff. And we don't water them. All summer, we don't. Once they're established, you know, and established means they went through a whole year in the ground. They've established their root systems. They're good to go. Then, you know, some of them are a little peaked right now, but they're not dying. They're just kind of going into premature.
Taking a break.
It's fall. You know, that kind of thing. and I'm going to get to that part too, but. In Oregon, you know, we have like many varieties of native plants that survive on what falls from the sky. And native plants can be used in our landscape and look good. You can get a book, one of the box stores or Amazon, you know, get on their list or something like that. But you can get a book on Oregon's native plant material, and it'll be a pocketbook size or maybe a little larger. Yeah. And it'll have photos and descriptions of all the kinds of plants that grow, like in the Coast Range or in the Mid Valley and in the Cascades. And you can say, well, that looks good or this looks good, there's shrubs in there, there's trees in there, and it just shows you all. Not every plant probably that grows in Oregon, but hundreds of them.
Gives you a good idea.
It gives you a good idea. And then your only problem is trying to find them somewhere in a nursery that actually has, you know, because not everybody, not every nursery has native plants to the area.
Sure. You know, that makes sense.
Yeah. So you got your hand on the trigger. What's
yep,
that mean?
It means okay. It's break time.
Break time.
All righty. We'll be back with more native planting.
Yes.
Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show. I'm getting old, man.
You forgot who I was?
I'm forgetting names. On News Radio 1240 KQEN. I got that right.
Just call me Bob.
Bob.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All righty, we're back. Mike Winters.
Yes.
Lawn and Garden Show. That's it.
You remembered my name.
I remembered your name, Malcolm.
Okay, Bob. Boy, I've been talking about some native plants here that you could use in your landscapes, and they look good. And I don't have a big list here, but I'll just throw a few things out at you. Oregon grape, it's good shrub, blooms beautiful yellow flowers. And,
is that Oregon's flower?
Yeah, it's Oregon's state flower.
That's what I thought.
And it is about, you could plant it in pavement out in the middle of the street, and it would grow.
It would grow.
Yeah, I mean, that's how tough it is. Yeah. And you can prune it and get it nice and full. You can make a hedge out of it, a small hedge. It's slow growing.
Yeah.
Got colorful foliage. It's evergreen. Deer don't eat it. Bingo.
Wow.
And it's a pretty shrub. It's just nice. And there's, you know, dwarf Oregon grape. There's spreading Oregon grape. There's tall Oregon grape. But, you know, that's another one is Ceanothus. It's kind of a... there's some that's a ground cover type, and there's some that grow into very large shrubs. And Ceanothus, some of it has kind of violet blue flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Looks good.
Nice.
But it would be a good hedge plant because it grows so fast and gets so thick. And
keeps
again,
the neighbors out.
Absolutely. Keep the deer out, too.
True.
Deer bite it and they die. I wish. No. You know, it's something that if you wanted a privacy screen, you could plant Ceanothus in your yard. It's a good one. Huckleberry, wild huckleberry. I used to buy wild huckleberries from this nursery over on the coast up by Florence. And this guy, all he sold was native plants. And he had a permit from the Forest Service, and he'd go out and dig these huckleberries and ferns and pines and, you know, a few other things. And he didn't have a lot of variety, but what he had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. And a nice old guy, I met him. I forget how I met him, but he just north of Florence, out in one of the back roads.
Along the coast.
Yeah.
I was thinking,
yeah,
on in the desert somewhere.
No, Florence on the ocean. And I would go over there and I'd buy a load of ferns from him or, you know, huckleberries, wild huckleberries. And they're a pretty little plant. And they do produce huckleberries, for crying out loud. And it takes a while to get a good crop. But if you got 10 or 15 of them, it does suffice. It suffices. And then there's ferns, all these ferns. You know, when you drive around in the hills and you look up on the hillside where there's a clear cut or something, you see all these ferns growing. Are they tough? You bet. They're growing in a clear cut, for crying out loud.
The blazing sun.
Blazing sun. and some types grow in the blazing shade. and they make a nice plant.
Yeah.
They're again, these are no-brainer. Don't worry about it. Nothing's going to eat it. And once it's established, you probably never have to do it much to it. I mean, you can, but you don't.
It's not necessary.
Not necessary. And as far as trees, of course, you got your native dogwoods. And if you go up the North Umpqua, up around Tokadee, there's dogwoods all over. But up around Tokadee, it seems like there's a real good stand of dogwoods and wild rhododendrons up in that country.
Yeah.
And they're growing in that old lava rock. You know, there's basically no soil. It's rock. It's lava rock. And these rhodies are, I've seen rhodies 10, 15 feet tall growing out of that stuff. And white wild dogwoods growing right out of that stuff. Nobody waters them. I mean, and they get snowed on probably, you know, 4 or 5 feet of snow a year on a regular winter.
They probably get buried in it.
Yeah, they get buried and they get broken branches, but they spring back and do well. And then there's, you know, of course, Douglas fir, ponderosa pine, incense cedar, big leaf maple. Those are just to name a few that these are no-brainer. They'll type plants. You plant them and they will grow. And after, like I say, the first year after they're established, you pretty much ignore them. That's what you call low maintenance.
Absolutely.
and the deer don't like these because they didn't come from a nursery.
that's the trick.
They come in and go, oh, that one's out of a nursery, let's eat it son.
Yeah,
right. But those are just a few, and like I say, you get this native plant handbook of Oregon or the Pacific Northwest.
Okay.
And you'll see these varieties listed, and you know where they grow, how they grow, why they grow. And there are nurseries that have these native plants. I have some of them. I've got like Oregon grape and Ceanothus. I don't have any huckleberry in stock, but I've got some ferns, and I'll have more ferns this winter. And I got Douglas fir, I've got ponderosa pine, I've got incense cedar, and I don't have any big leaf maple, but they're easy to come by because I got about a 10 million of them on my place growing wild, and all I got to do is dig up a few seedlings, pot them up, and
there you go.
A couple of years are ready to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, cool. and like I say, these are just some ideas for a natural landscape, and you can incorporate in between. You get, let's say the basic, let's say 70% of your landscape is native stuff. Well, you can sneak in some other things, some different types of azaleas or some different types of rhododendrons or some ground covers to complement, and they, you know, they all basically, once established, will take the same kind of care in the same kind of fertilization, if should you choose to fertilize on a regular basis, like at least once a year. And you know, it works good, it looks good, and it's a very low maintenance type landscape. And these, like I say, these are just ideas you can look, and you want to, you know, if you want to change your landscape to something that's more maintenance free or more tough or deer proof. I'm not saying a deer won't bite something, but they won't sit there and destroy it like it's a brand new rose bush. They love roses.
Do they? Yeah, do they? I wouldn't think they'd.
Oh, yeah. They eat a rose right to the ground.
Wow.
I can take you to my place and show them all the stubs that are sitting there in the deer. But I got one out by the driveway.
Yeah.
They used to eat it all the time, and where we park our rigs. And this year it's about three and a half feet tall, and it didn't, and I don't water it. I don't take care of it, and it blooms on it.
Yeah.
You know, and there's other things growing around it, and the deer seem to have left it alone the last few years.
Wow.
Yeah, they're looking for more delicate things to eat. You know.
Yeah. But, that's what I was thinking. I wouldn't think that would be on their delicacy
not list. On their agenda.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to get back to the drought thing here for a minute, the drought conditions. And as I travel around, I've noticed that, and I notice this on my own property, I've noticed that there are many deciduous trees that are starting to color up already, like it's fall. If you drive around and look, you'll see some trees are turning their fall colors.
Well, it's a little early.
Yeah, it's about a month early, and this is the drought is what's causing it.
Oh, okay.
Because if they continue to grow, that means they need ample moisture to grow, and if they don't have the ingredients to stay supple, if you will, then they begin to shut down because they want to make it another year, so they begin to shut down the process. And so as they shut down the process, like the maples and stuff like that, you can see them all over town, the leaves start to color up, and you know, some of the maples are red, some are yellow, some are, you know, orangish.
Yeah.
And as you drive through, where do you live from here? Which direction?
Oh, Sutherland now, but I was in
okay, well, as you're as you're leaving town, you know, just kind of glance around at some of the trees, and you'll see what I'm saying.
Okay.
And over in Stewart Park, they're turning.
Bobby Laurelwood.
Yeah, yeah. They're all, and unless it's a real well-irrigated, you know, yard.
Area,
But normally, you know, your trees are your outer plants away from the house, that kind of thing. And and there's coloring up, period. I even got some at the nursery that are doing it that I've planted in the field for shade for long term, but I don't water them. I don't do anything to them. And I got one that's almost beautiful, bright red. It's gorgeous. It's been it's been coloring up for about 3 weeks now.
Jeez.
Yeah. So
that's really early.
But that's what the drought does. See, it causes the plants to shut down on prematurely. And so that by the time when real fall rolls around, where you think in October they should be beautiful and colorful, well, there will be some that are that way, you know, some that are, you know, in the irrigated spots. But a lot of them will probably already have lost their leaves.
Mm.
Yeah.
They are ready for winter or fall. Whatever.
Yeah, they're ready. They need to survive another year, so they just shut it down and they're budded up.
Save their energy.
And there's no energy being expended to keep all of it alive and all the leaves growing, et cetera. So they just reserve that energy for the next spring.
So, hibernation.
Exactly. Exactly. And and like I said, this just usually doesn't even begin to happen till middle, end of September, 1st of October.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when you're like, fall is here. It's great. Yeah,
yeah, you can feel the chill of the fall.
Exactly. It's, you know, back down in the 50s and even in the 40s sometimes.
Yeah.
When you get that. But, and then there's some trees that are, they kind of skip the color part. The leaves have just dried up and are falling to the ground. They're brown. So I don't know if those trees are dead. I haven't actually gone up to them and looked at them.
Yeah.
But you can see some trees that instead of going through the coloring process, mm-hmm. they just kind of went from
skip
green.
Skip that stage.
Yeah, from green to brown and they're dropping the leaves all over the place. So
that doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't. You know, and like I said earlier, it takes so many more years of rainfall, good rainfall, to recharge those systems and bring that ground moisture
back up to where it should be.
Exactly, for these trees to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it ain't there yet, but I don't know.
Speaking of there, we're at a break.
Again? We just had one.
I know it. They couldn't come up quick. This is the last one. All right, we'll be back with a home stretch with Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show. Next, News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All righty, home stretch here on this Wednesday with Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You're not the 1031 anymore?
No.
Okay, so I don't have you're to gonna sing get me any any Hank Williams ballads. All right.
You're going to get me in trouble.
No, it's a what? going back to the trees turning color, one tree that I've noticed that's not turning yet are the oaks.
The oaks, they're
drought lovers. Uh-huh. And not lovers, but they survive well in a drought. They have a very deep root system. And, mm-hmm. You know, some of the older ones that are 3 feet in diameter, they've been there, you know, 150 years or something. They got roots down to the center of the earth, I think. But they haven't.
Is that where they get the term the mighty oak?
Yes, they do. And they're still holding up. I mean, there might be a few I've missed, but I'm kind of comparing, you know, what the maples are doing, what the dogwoods are doing, and then, you know, the oaks, and you go, okay. But the oaks seem to be the hardiest of the bunch. So if you got oaks, those are good. You know, but we sell a few types of oaks at the nursery, but they're not a popular item. I don't know why, because they're pretty, and some of them turn like a kind of a burgundy red in the fall, have beautiful fall color. Like a pin oak is kind of interesting in that it turns a real deep red, and the leaves don't drop. The leaves then stay on all through the winter.
Nice.
And then
you don't have to rake the suckers up.
Not until spring when they fall.
Oh, springtime. Yeah. Here we go.
And then they turn brown over the winter and they hang on. And then when the spring, when the buds start to swell and push brand new leaves, that's when all the leaves drop off.
Oh.
Yeah, kind of a strange tree. But it's a pretty tree. You know, it's one of them no maintenance, can't kill this tree, so don't even try.
Does it take it forever to get to any size?
Right, right. So the most that I've seen that are having are struggles are the maples and the dogwoods. So
you know, okay.
The oaks are good, man.
They're in good shape.
Yeah. So here's a solution. Let's say you have a tree in your yard that's turning color right now. You could help it out a little bit by dragging a hose over, laying a hose at the base of the trunk, and turning on a dribble of water for about 20 minutes and let it have a deep soak. It's not going to turn it back to green or anything, but what it's going to do is give it enough strength and energy to make sure that it survives till next year.
Hang in there.
Yeah, and this time of year, doing something like that, I think it would be impossible to overwater it almost. I mean, you'd have to put thousands of gallons on it. But if you take a hose over and it's coming out like a half a gallon a minute, you know, very slow, more than a trickle, but not full force, you know, it takes a while to get down there. And another reason you turn it on slow is you don't want the water running off. You want the water saturating the stem and mm-hmm. going down instead of, you know,
just the sidewalk or whatever.
Yeah, instead of it so much force that it just goes everywhere,
mm-hmm.
you know, just and going everywhere.
That does no good.
Yeah, it doesn't do any good, and just reuse a lot of water that goes on the sidewalk. You know, just don't. And if you got some shrubs that are looking a little weak, and you think, maybe I should give them a little water. They're not dying or anything. Mm-hmm. They're just slowing down. Well, you just want to make sure you preserve them and let them get through the last little bit that we're experiencing. Are you leaving me?
Somebody is summoning me.
Oh, summoning you. What do I do when I get to the end?
I'll be back.
Okay. He walks out of the room like, I can't do this stuff. All I can do is talk. But, you know, if you got some shrubs that are kind of little peaked, again, lay the hose at the base of it. And if you got a sprinkler system, turn the sprinkler system on your shrubs and things and, you know, give them a longer duration of sprinkling and just do it in the either early morning or after the sun goes down at night. Just manually turn it on and let it go for a half an hour, maybe 40 minutes, and give them, you know, once a week, you're going to keep them alive. They may not look, you know, like they're responding, but the roots are alive, and that's what's most important. It's the roots need to stay alive so that, and you don't have to do it every day, just maybe once a week, every 10 days, something like that, until it finally gets to be cooler and we have a few rainfalls, and you know, then you can stop that nonsense. But you just want to give them a chance and make sure that they're going to survive till next spring. Okay, and again, don't have so much water coming out of the end of your hose or your sprinkler system that you're watering sidewalks and driveways like that. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense there. And lawns at this time of year, since it is dry, may need a little extra water, especially after you've aerated and thatched and fertilized. You wanna pump some water to them so that they kind of get invigorated and begin to get that lushness back to them and fill in any of the bare spots that you might have created. And again, don't do it in the hot heat of the day. You're wasting water. It's half of it's being evaporated. It doesn't even hit the ground. And or like I say, early morning, late evening, that's good. And like I say, in a normal year, cooler weather starts, you know, say in September. Well, I don't know if it's going to start in September this year or not. But if it does, and we get a little rain, and maybe a little fog and all that, then we can start cutting back on that. But if we got a significant rainfall, say, of at least 2 or 3 inches, you could quit this watering business, because then you've got some good soaking rain that would actually get down to the roots and preserve them. The last thing I'll talk about is if you have potted plants or hanging baskets, move them to a shady place while it's, you know, this persistent sun, 86, 90 degree stuff, 109 or whatever. Yeah, you know, place them in a shady spot until cooler weather arrives. You know, you might have a pot of petunias or geraniums or something like that. So that's it.
That's it. Sorry.
Okay. Well, that's all right. I got notes for next week.
Cool.
Thank you for listening.
Told you I'd be back.
I knew you were quick. I couldn't believe it.
Kyle said, don't leave. All right. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Bye.